You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. It's our second to last Mock Draft Monday special. The NFL draft coming two Thursdays from now, so we're almost to the big weekend. We'll be looking at some of the latest mock drafts coming from experts, as well as a few of your listener mock drafts as we gear up for the 2021 NFL draft. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The ink on his contract probably hasn't dried yet, but Alden Smith's status with the Seahawks already appears to be in limbo. Not really a big surprise when you consider his past track record, but per Travers Mackerel of WDSU, the St. Bernard Parish in Louisiana issued a bulletin stating that Smith is wanted for second-degree battery. The incident allegedly happened at the French Press Coffee House in Chalmette, Louisiana, just 2 days after he signed with the Seahawks. And Mackerel also reported that the police department has video evidence. Aside from that, to this point, Rob, we haven't heard much else. The Seahawks did release a statement as a team earlier today indicating that Alden had reached out to them about this situation and that they had no further comments at this time. So clearly they're trying to get all the information that they can right now. I don't know if he's on the run, but the St. Bernard Parish is looking for him. They are trying to reprimand him after this incident. And so here we are, less than a week after he signed a one-year contract, and the troubled defensive end already has himself in a legal entanglement.
Yeah, it's obviously very concerning news for the Seahawks, and obviously even more concerning for Alden Smith, because, you know, second-degree battery charge, considering his issues off the field in the past. I mean, we could be looking at real jail time here if he is, in fact, found to be guilty. Now, before we go down that road, though, of course, I think that it's very important to just mention that, you know, we just saw with Aaron Donald of the Rams that he was initially accused of assault himself, and that since the purported victim has apologized, things like that. So it is important to acknowledge, again, that Alden Smith, even with some of the issues that he's had off the field before, that you are, of course, presumed innocent until proven guilty. But if these charges are correct, if the which I should have mentioned that the charges include the fact that the purported victim in this case characterized himself as an acquaintance of Alden Smith as well, if there is potentially video evidence, as you mentioned, Corbin, it does not look good for Alden Smith and the Seahawks. And so obviously a very concerning bit of news here on a Monday morning.
Yeah, and we haven't gotten any other updates to this point. I would anticipate there's going to be some more information coming out in the near future, especially if Smith is apprehended. In the release, the press release, that was not supposed to go to the media, apparently, but it did. In that press release, it indicated that he was in a white Nissan when he was last seen. And so what makes this really interesting is this was 2 days after he signed his contract. And so you've just got to, you know, as somebody on the outside, you got to wonder, how could you put yourself in this position? You just signed a contract. A team took another chance on you, and now you're in this situation. And as you mentioned, he right now is innocent until proven guilty. Maybe it'll be an Aaron Donald type situation where another day or two from now, there will be new information that comes out and the video sheds light that maybe he was not involved in this from a physical standpoint. But with his track record, you've got to wonder where this is heading. And look at the Seahawks. This is the second straight season they've had an offseason acquisition that has become involved in legal issues. Last year was Quentin Dunbar in May with his armed robbery charges that were eventually dropped. But he was arrested and he was apprehended, was kept in jail for a day, and then was released on bail. And so the Seahawks could be dealing with a similar situation here. The big difference, Quentin Dunbar did not have the track record that Alden Smith does. Really, aside from a few traffic violations, he had not been in trouble with the law. Alden Smith has had multiple DUIs. He has a domestic violence incident on his track record. He was in an airport and Apparently, a TSA worker said that he shouted he had a bomb. Eventually, those charges were dropped. So, I mean, his track record is extremely lengthy. Quentin Dunbar did not have that. So I don't know that we're going to see the Seahawks be near as patient with this situation as it develops. They might just wash their hands when you consider all the issues that Smith has had. So I think it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens here in the next 24 to 48 hours as more information becomes available. If Smith is apprehended, maybe we find out some things that shed some new light, but the Seahawks certainly are in a situation they did not hope to be in 5 or 6 days ago.
Well, exactly. And you mentioned Quentin Dunbar. What about Chad Wheeler? You know, I mean, that's the thing is the Seahawks have had some, you know, some pretty damning things happen to him here in the last couple of years. And, you know, I've always respected John Schneider and Pete Carroll. I think that, you know, I was among those who was kind of lauding the Seahawks for being willing to take the gamble with a player like Alden Smith, because Pete Carroll has had such an incredible track record of being able to turn around some troubled youth. We kind of talked about how big of a deal that was for him back in LA. But, you know, when John Schneider basically said that he was never going to be taking or drafting players, bringing players onto the roster that had any kind of domestic violence types of issues. And then, of course, the club wound up drafting Frank Clark, who there was all kinds of talk about him there, you know, with the Chad Wheeler situation, the Quentin Dunbar situation, you know, just whether it be domestic violence or just violence in general, obviously puts a potential stain on the franchise. And so protecting the team, of course, is one of the things the Seahawks have always made such a big deal about. So it is very concerning. Again, I don't know that the Seahawks are going to just cut Alden Smith at this point, because I don't know that they know all the facts yet. But I feel pretty confident that if Alden Smith winds up getting himself arrested, winds up obviously being found guilty in any kind of way, then I think that Seattle is going to have to, you know, kind of rethink the way that they're going through some of these processes, because they're bringing some players that are basically kind of destroying the name and the level of respect that a lot of the fans, a lot of the people around the NFL and the sports community have always thought about when they think of the Seattle Seahawks as a franchise.
It really does make the Seahawks look like some of those past statements that were made by Schneider and Carroll that, you know, they're falling on deaf ears. That's really what it boils down to. You're still taking chances on players like this. And I'm with you. You know, last week I was lauding this move because Smith has really turned his life around. And I wanted to believe that. And again, I'm still going to believe that right now until we know all the facts. But things are not looking good right now. That's for sure. And I would think that with his track record, and the fact is, if he got in trouble at all here, the NFL could easily put another indefinite suspension on him. He was out for 4 years. So I could see Roger Goodell saying, okay, that's the final strike. You're done. And he's 31 years old. So it's not like he's in a position where, well, we might be able to have you sit out a year and they can come back. He could do it, but he's getting to be a little older player. And so at some point, everything catches up to you. And so all of us are hoping, I know you and I both are hoping that this ends up not being an issue with Alden Smith, and maybe he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But you've got to wonder what really happened, considering this was only 2 days after he signed his contract and the things that he's been involved with in his life. Hopefully he did not do the things that he allegedly did in this incident. But if he did, I would think that he's never going to dress for a Seahawks practice, let alone a game. We'll just have to see what happens. When we return in the second quarter, shifting gears to our second to last mock draft Monday, we're going to check out 4 mock drafts from the experts. Who are they picking to the Seahawks at number 56 overall? We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring, ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece. They're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10x10. This collection features high-quality fine jewelry that will surprise and delight, and fairly priced, so that you can give her something special and truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10x10 only at BlueNile.com. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Locked On Podcast Network is covering the NFL draft from all angles. Catch up on the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 podcast presented by Odyssey. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and the Draft Dudes podcast for the latest draft news. And stay tuned for more info about our live NFL draft coverage. Rob, we are getting really close to the real deal. Next Thursday, the 2021 NFL Draft kicking off in Cleveland, Ohio. The process has gone a little bit faster this spring than it did a year ago when we were at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. No combine obviously has changed things substantially, but teams valuing pro days, the Senior Bowl, even more than previous seasons. And here we are now getting close to the real deal. Players preparing to figure out where they're going to land to start their NFL careers. Teams continuing to build their rosters for the 2021 season. Let's look at a few expert mock drafts. Who do they have the Seahawks picking at number 56 overall? We've been doing this for the last couple of weeks as we've drawn closer to the real deal. Let's start with CBS Sports, and this has been the pick for CBS. I double-checked three of their past four mock drafts. There's been a lot of changes for other teams, but CBS continues to send Aaron Banks, the guard from Notre Dame, to the Seahawks at pick 56. And again, this would suggest that Banks is playing center or Damian Lewis is sliding inside of the center position. As we've talked about time and time again, he played a game there last year, held up well at a position he had never played in a game at any prior level. And Pete Carroll has hinted that that could be a possibility for him down the line. I would think if Banks is the pick, Lewis is the one that's going to be playing center.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense. Just because you look at Damian Lewis and just kind of that short, stubby build that he has, and Aaron Banks is just that classic Mike Solari type of bulldozing guard. I mean, he's all 6'5", 330 pounds. He played mostly left guard at Notre Dame. So obviously with the trade for Gabe Jackson, then you'd be asking either Jackson to move back to right guard or ask, Aaron Banks to make that transition over, but he has the size and physicality that would make a lot of sense. At the same time, I think there's a possibility that he's not on the board. And I think that we've talked so much about the centers in this class. I think the center class is special. I would be surprised if Seattle drafted a guard and asked Damian Lewis to make that center transition. I think that they just probably go with a little bit more of a natural center from this year's draft class.
If one of those big-time centers is not available, if there's a major run before pick 56, then I would think the Seahawks are even more likely than they already are going into this draft to trade down from 56. And again, we don't know how the draft board's going to unfold. It might be really tricky to move down from pick 56. We don't know. That's going to have to play out on Friday night when we're watching second, third-round coverage for the 2021 NFL draft. But certainly if they're going to look at guard, I would think Banks is playing left guard and Jackson just staying at right guard because that's where he's played since the 2016 season. He opened his career at left guard. He can play either spot. But Damian Lewis would be the one making a big change going to the center position with that selection. Now, Yahoo and the Draft Network both picked the same player. You don't actually see that very often. I noticed that a lot of these expert mock drafts from these big media companies, I know they monitor the picks that are made by other experts and other websites, and they try not to replicate that. Obviously, people like Trevor Lawrence at pick number one, you're going to be sticking with a consensus selection. But pick 56, typically there's going to be a different selection. But both of them have the Seahawks going to the defensive end position, even with all the moves they have made, re-signing Dunlap, bringing in Kerry Hyder, re-signing Mayo, and of course, if Alden Smith's on the roster, all those players have been added to the mix, and yet both Yahoo and the Draft Network had the Seahawks taking Carlos Boogie Basham out of Wake Forest. one of my favorite defensive ends in a class that isn't overly great at that position group, but 260-plus pounds, big body defender that isn't going to bend around the corner very often, not a speed rusher, but a very effective pass rusher that wins with power and is technically refined, had an excellent week at the Senior Bowl. He's a player that I think could be a difference maker on day one, and if you're picking best player available and he's there at 56, it might make some sense.
Oh, I think it'd make a lot of sense if he is available at number 56. But as you just said, Corbin, it's not a very good draft class among the defensive linemen. That's why I'd be really surprised if Basham is available because, you know, he isn't the flashiest of athletes, but he is the most productive, the most consistent of this year's edge rushers. And then he also checks off a lot of boxes off the field as well. He could have come out a year ago and probably been a second-round player. To come back for his senior season and be able to put on quality tape yet again, be the consistent playmaker that he was. And then, as you mentioned, going to the Senior Bowl, again, checking all of those boxes, had a strong workout as well. I just would be really surprised if he's available. I think that Carlos Basham has a chance to sneak into that late portion of the first round. And I personally think that he's going to go within the top 10 to 12 selections of the second round, be long off the board by the time that Seattle is up at number 56 overall.
The last one here, we're going to be sticking with defensive linemen, but we wanted to save this one for last, Rob, because Pro Football Network, this was maybe the biggest wrench that I've seen on a multiple round mock draft. And you and I both know this. There's almost always a player or two that was top 10, top 15 that just free falls. And the Seahawks benefited a couple years ago. DK Metcalf was a player that most people were mocking middle of the first round. And he lasted till pick 64. The Seahawks ended his free fall by trading back to the end of the second round. So it happens every year. Maybe this year it'll happen a little bit more because we've had such a different scouting process. But Gregory Rousseau out of Miami, if you would have gone into the 2020 season and thought that he was going anywhere other than the top five picks, people would have thought you were crazy because his 2019 season was insane. He led the country with 15 and a half sacks. 19 and a half tackles for loss, 6'7", 265 pounds. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that looks like a starting NFL defensive end in every sense of the word. It's Rousseau, and he was incredibly productive for the Hurricanes in that 2019 season. But he did not play this past year. One of the big-time talents that sat out because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So he didn't have an opportunity to continue playing at that level, wasn't even on the field. And he had a very underwhelming pro day. I did not expect he was only going to have a 30-inch vertical. I did not expect him. 4.68 40 was pretty solid for his size. But I thought overall his testing just did not stack up to what I thought it was going to. And so there are a lot of people that are having him free fall in the mock draft because there are some character concerns there to go with these testing numbers not being on par with what people thought they were going to be. But you watch the film and you see an incredibly productive edge rusher that can win with speed. He can win with power. He can win with counter moves. And yet falling to number 56 there, I could see him falling late in the first round maybe, but I don't see any way that Rousseau's there at 56. If he is, then absolutely best player available. The Seahawks would be chomping at the bit for the opportunity to pick him.
I think that they would. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's just as too big and strong and talented to fall that far. Now, you bring up some really good points, though. I mean, the fact that he did opt out in the 2020 season, this is a guy who only had that one big splashy year for Miami. And so, you know, some guys opted out for, you know, for health reasons. Some guys opted out because they were concerned about their draft grade. That's the thing, is that why did Gregory Rousseau opt out? And so that's one of the questions that NFL teams are going to have to really start to talk to him and try to get into his head a little bit. Because maybe he didn't believe in himself that he was going to be able to match that type of success. I think that he would have because, you know, Miami had a terrific defensive line this past season. Again, with Quincy Roche on the one side, Jalen Phillips wound up becoming a superstar for Miami this past year. If they would have had Rousseau as well, Miami Hurricanes might have been, you know, back to being a, you know, one of the elite teams in all of college football. But I just see a guy, as you mentioned, Corbin, with his size, his burst up field. I mean, this is a guy that at 6'6", 6'7", he can slither around people. I mean, he is a big, talented athlete. And those guys, considering that defensive end is such a premium position, they rarely fall down the board that much. So if there is some reason why Rousseau is falling that far down the board, then I think the Seahawks, with only the three draft picks, with the fact that they've had some struggles with some guys with character concerns, as we just talked about with Alden Smith in the first quarter, I think that that might be a player that Seattle would have to kind of wash their hands off of him and basically allow him to continue to slide, just because they do have a pretty strong defensive line. And again, they have some concerns about bringing some players in right now who have some character questions with everything that's happened for them in the last calendar year.
That could be a player, as you mentioned, if the Alden Smith thing does not work out, which right now it looks like it's not going to. You've already had Chad Wheeler's fallout with that horrific situation early in the offseason. The Seahawks at this point wouldn't be able to afford to be able to take another risk like that. The amount of criticism that would come out if, indeed, the character concerns were a big part of the free fall. If it had to do with his testing numbers more than that, then maybe that's not as big of an issue for fans, and you might be more willing to take that chance because you know you're getting a really good football player that's put a lot of really good tape out there as one of the country's premier edge rushers in 2019. So it would be an interesting conundrum. Again, I don't think he's going to be anywhere close to pick 56. I'd be surprised if he falls that far, but we have seen it happen. We've seen players that had top 10, top 15 billing that have fallen in the draft. And it seems like it happens yearly, so maybe Rousseau is that guy that's there. And again, at 56, if the Seahawks don't have to worry about character concerns necessarily, and they feel like they can take him on, then that's a player that could fit that best player available narrative, and they could take him at 56. We come back in the third quarter. We're going to shift from the experts to our listeners. Last opportunity to come through three mock drafts from loyal Locked On Seahawks listeners. We'll be taking a look at some of our favorite picks on those three mock drafts. When we come back, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. Today through the 26th, listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason Lockenfora, and Brian Baldinger. Our local experts for every team will be making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 in the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's AUDACY. It's our second-to-last mock draft Monday of the 2021 offseason here on Locked On Seahawks. Last quarter, we looked at four drafts from the experts. Now we're going to swing it back to our listeners who, at this point, Rob, I think know as much as the experts do, at least about what the Seahawks are going to be looking to pick in the 2021 NFL draft. We've got a three-pick draft, no trade downs, just three selections, and we've got two drafts with five players where there were two trade downs to recoup some picks. So let's get to it. Our first one coming from Brandon. This is our three-pick selection, and it's a bunch of names we haven't really talked about much here on our podcast during the draft process, but three players that would be very intriguing fits in Seattle. At pick 56, Elijah Moore, the receiver out of Ole Miss. At 129, Drew Dahlman, the center from Stanford. And 250, Jason Pinnock, the cornerback from Pittsburgh. All three of these players would address major positional needs, both short and long term. And if the Seahawks are going to keep it all three selections, I think that's the way it's got to be. Those are the three position groups that absolutely need to be addressed.
No, I agree. I mean, if this is what Seattle does, I think that Seahawks fans should be really excited. And I would agree with the comment you made before about how the Seahawks listeners, know Seattle's needs probably better than a lot of the draft experts out there. Because again, I think this is this mock draft perfectly encapsulates that. I think when you start off with Elijah Moore, the wide receiver from Ole Miss, the Seahawks prioritize statistics. I mean, you actually put the ball into the end zone. This is a guy who led the country in receptions and receiving yards. He was the focal point of Lane Kiffin's offense at Ole Miss. You know that DK Metcalf, of course, went to Ole Miss as well. With the lack of access that scouts had this year, I think that teams, the wise teams, are going to be talking to their players about their former teammates at these different programs. Lane Kiffin and Pete Carroll as both USC guys in the past, they might be some conversations there as well. I think that Elijah Moore would make a lot of sense for Seattle as being that dynamic slot receiver. We've talked about some of the other more like Rondale Moore and some of the other dynamic slot receivers in this draft class. Elijah Moore is about as pro ready as any of them, and it would make a lot of sense. Number 56 overall, 4.3 speed all day long. I think that would certainly intrigue Russell Wilson.
And I like the other two picks. Drew Dahlman is a center that I think is going to be available in the third or fourth round. Big reason why: he is not a big center. He's undersized for the position. Not necessarily somebody that's going to knock defenders off the football, but he's got good agility, good quickness, and outstanding football IQ as the son of a former NFL coach. So he is going to be able to step in. I think he's got one of the highest floors of this center group. He's a guy that could start for you probably day one, especially in a zone-centric scheme. Could be a great fit with your new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. But really the pick in these three that I'm most excited about from a value perspective, Jason Pinnock is shooting up my draft board, at least from a Seahawks perspective, because there are only two corners in this draft class, when you look at pro day numbers, that have all the athletic check marks, all the thresholds checked off the Seahawks look for previously the corner position, and has the 32-plus inch arms. You have Melifonwu from Syracuse, and Jason Pinnock is the other one. And you look at the production: 6 interceptions the last 3 years, 19 passes defense. Has he been burned at times? Absolutely. Has he shown 4.4 speed in the field? At times, that's been questionable. But I like the physicality that he plays with and the chip on his shoulder. I think he's a player with his size at around 6 foot, 200 pounds, with the long arms. He fits exactly what the Seahawks like on the outside. And I think Pete Carroll would be really excited about the opportunity to be able to develop this kid. I don't know if he's there at 250, but there's a chance, because he's not one of the higher rated corners. But I like what I see on film. I see a guy that can be coached into a starter in this league. And I like the physical and athletic tools based on what Seattle has preferred in the past. Now, looking at our next one, Scott in the 503, 5 selections on this one. Pick 65, Quinn Miners. We've talked a lot about the center out of Wisconsin Whitewater. Pick 129, Benjamin St. Juice, the corner from Minnesota. 138, Bobby Brown, defensive lineman out of Texas A&M. Maybe the first time we've seen him mocked this entire offseason of the Seahawks. At 192, Shai Smith, speedy receiver out of South Carolina. And at 250, Dan Moore Jr., a tackle out of Texas A&M. Maybe your heir apparent for Dwayne Brown. Another draft that really does a good job of addressing positional needs, both in the short term and, with Dan Moore at the end, the long term at the tackle position.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Is again, that our Seahawks listeners definitely know Seattle's biggest areas of concern, and I think that you look at how the Seattle has drafted in the past. They have very much prioritize the big time conference players, so a number of SEC players. I think it's interesting. I just, as much as I love Quinn Miners, I love his game, I love his personality, I just have a hard time believing that Seattle is going to go the small school route early on. I do love Miners' versatility. He was a left guard primarily at Wisconsin Whitewater, switched over and played some snaps at the center position at the Senior Bowl. You love the toughness. He breaks his hand at the Senior Bowl and yet still continues to play. So to me, there's a lot of things about him that I think is interesting. I like the fact that they're going with a corner and Brian St. Juice, another corner who maybe doesn't check every single box when it comes to the different things that Seattle has liked in the past, but he is very, very close. If he had just a couple of interceptions on his tape, then I think we would be that much higher on Seattle's board. So, but in terms of his length, in terms of his straight line speed, all of those things really check a lot of boxes. And I know that you are a big fan of Shai Smith as well.
Shai Smith, to me, is the type of player the Seahawks have always been drawn to because size does not matter at the receiver position. Now, does Pete Carroll like receivers built like DK Metcalf? Absolutely. He's had more misses than hits, though, with those big receivers. But you look at some of the smaller receivers that have done well in Seattle, Golden Tate, Tyler Lockett, those kind of players, Doug Baldwin, they do really well in Seattle's scheme, and Russell Wilson builds a rapport with those players. I look at a player the caliber of Shai Smith. He didn't put up big numbers at South Carolina, but who has he had to throw the football to him? They have gone through quarterbacks like I go through water bottles, just dumping them off the side. Hey, let's go drink another one. They have not been able to find a quarterback solution up to this point the last couple of years. And in the SEC, it just hasn't panned out. But Shai Smith has still put up solid numbers, an explosive athlete. You can use him on jet sweeps. You can throw the ball to him on screens. He can create some after the catch. Downfield capability, can return kicks and punts. So he's a dynamo. There may be some questions about his durability. There may be some questions about his ability to run routes at times, but he's tough. He will make contested catches. He doesn't have any issue getting into the middle of the field. So I love that pick at 192. I don't know he lasts that long, but this is a really deep receiver class. A player of that caliber could slip late into day three. Shai Smith would be a lot of fun teaming up with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. So overall, that's a pretty solid draft haul for the Seahawks, again, that addresses a lot of big needs. Look at our last one here, Andrew Sharp. This one has five picks as well. Quinn Meinerz at pick 59. So, again, Meinerz has been one of the most popular mock picks for the Seahawks, both from experts and listeners. At 119, Stone Forsythe, the tackle out of Florida, a player we haven't had a chance to talk about. I know you're excited about his potential in the league. He's a fast riser at the tackle position. 132, Milton Williams, defensive tackle from Louisiana Tech. 143, Jalen Darden, the receiver out of North Texas. And 168, Trill Williams, one of the stud corners coming out of Syracuse. Another really solid draft that, quite honestly, I don't know if I'm sold on Stone Forsythe that early, but that draft has a lot of potential on day three.
It really does. I mean, that's the thing. We have three really good mock drafts here to kind of break down. That's where I was going to kind of compare and contrast the two defensive linemen that were selected in each of these two mock drafts. You know, in the last one, we were talking about Bobby Brown from Texas A&M. He is just a big, burly kind of a classic run-stuffing kind of a guy. I think the kind of guy that Clint Hurt can tap that potential, because Bobby Brown's – that some people would say that his effort waned. Certainly his consistency waned. But you watch him against Alabama and some of the better teams on their schedule, and Bobby Brown stepped up. So to me, he is – one type of a player that Seattle may feel like they need a little bit more, obviously, after letting Jaron Reed go. On the flip side, when you have the Milton Williams from Louisiana Tech, he's a little bit more of a quick twitch kind of a guy. And so I think that both of those are positions of concern for the Seahawks, and that they are in both these mock drafts, Seattle will be taking those defensive linemen at reasonable positions, because I can't imagine Seattle investing in early selection at number 56 overall, for example, on the defensive line. I think it's most likely they go in the middle rounds or later rounds. I also like the fact that they, again, we talked about Quinn Meinerz, but with Stone Forsythe, the offensive tackle, we've talked so much, Corbin, about the idea that Seattle has to have some type of heir apparent for either Dwayne Brown at left tackle or Brandon Shell at the right tackle position. With Stone Forsythe, you're talking about a massive man. He's 6'8", 320 pounds, has really long arms. He is not quite as nimble, not the zone blocker that I think that some people are looking for, but he is really good in pass protection. And so I think that is somebody that Russell Wilson certainly would be excited about as well.
They would have some foresight by picking Forsythe if he's going to end up being your guy at left tackle, replacing Dwayne Brown. There are a couple picks in here I love. I could rave about Trill Williams. I've done it a bunch of other podcasts, though. I don't see him being there at 160. I think he gets picked significantly earlier than that. But I'm going to talk about another receiver, because Shai Smith is one that's on my short list, but a player that is really climbing my list. He's 5'7", 174 pounds. So from a size standpoint, Jalen Darden does not look like an NFL receiver. He looks like he probably should be playing in high school on JV. I mean, he does not look like a stud college receiver, but 19 touchdowns last year, over 1,100 receiving yards. He can beat you vertically. And what really excites me about him, you would think from his size that this is not a guy that breaks a lot of tackles, but he's a diamondback rattlesnake. This dude just slithers through tacklers. They can't get hands on him. He's like got butter all over his uniform. He's so tiny, they can't get a good pursuit angle on him. He's so difficult to tackle. He broke 23 tackles last year per Pro Football Focus. You watch the film and you can see it. In the red zone, they throw a quick bubble to him, and he'd be like, there's five defenders over there. He's going down quick. And then he somehow gets through all of those tacklers, slips through. I don't care if he's playing against Sunbelt competition. I mean, this guy was incredible. And so I look at his playmaking ability, the fact he can return punts and kicks. He was really good at that at North Texas too. I think he's a guy that's going to primarily play from the slot. Another player that would be so much fun to put with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. And if there's a team that isn't going to be scared by the fact that he's tiny, the Seahawks have proven they will take smaller receivers and they'll turn into really good players at the next level. This guy fits your modern NFL game, and he'd be a lot of fun catching passes from Russell Wilson. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Audacy app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to look back at some of the best day three selections for the Seahawks under John Schneider. So fourth round through the seventh round, going to look back at 11 years of drafts for Throwback Tuesday. Looking forward to it. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Thanks for listening. Go Hawks.